No happy Friday today. We are pre-recording on a Wednesday. Thank you for everyone joining me because I'm being difficult this week. Have to have a little oral surgery and mouths and talking are tricky after that. So
such
thanks
a bummer
for being here. I know I'm a little bit grouchy today, so hopefully you guys will raise me up here.
We will, absolutely. Because we're just sunshine, Mara and I. We just love to agree. It's a kumbaya when we get together. It's beautiful.
So our first topic is one that we talk about all the time. I know you haven't heard about this before, but COVID is raging here in the U.S. and around
COVID,
the world.
That's a topic this week?
I know.
Just parachuted out of nowhere.
I know. All of a sudden we have Omicron, depending on how you would like to say it. I've decided Omicron is going to be my chosen way of saying it, but you can say it however you like.
Have you dove into how it gets its name?
With the Greek alphabet.
Yeah.
So it's like a hurricane.
Yeah.
Someone just fixes it.
But they skipped over Xi because of President Xi, the China.
Really?
President from China. They didn't want to name a variant
yeah.
after a world leader.
Yeah, I hate
especially
that.
With the whole virus.
I actually thought it was incredibly appropriate, but others who made that decision didn't know.
I know. Me. I'm super frustrated with it right now because I was literally, while I was driving into work today, before I went to work, we were paying my daughter's fees for her study abroad. She was going to be going to the UK, and we were going to the UK because she's studying marine biology in places like New Zealand and Australia are completely locked down.
Yeah.
Finally got accepted at the UK. Everything was locked down there, locked down here. Everything's ready to go. And then we got an email today saying, sorry, we've canceled. And so we're like, well, who canceled? Why? Like, what are we shutting it down for? And I know that we still have a pandemic going on, but you can get COVID at Target here or at what's the Target in, I don't know, in the UK.
Yeah, Glasgow.
So I've got crying daughter and frustration, but we do have this new variant, which seems to be on the surface. Things can change. Lessening. It's spreading. That's what happens to viruses. They change. But right now, it doesn't look very serious. The stock market, depending on the day, can't decide how serious it is. How serious should we be looking at this? Should we be locking down the world, Mara?
It's minute by minute. We were talking about this before. I mean, this just goes on and on.
Yes.
One of the things I noticed is, and I think we want it, so I'm not faulting, but we analyze what we don't know, then we analyze when we do know. I was listening to this report about the new variant, and essentially this highly informed, highly respected person essentially said, here's all the things we don't know about it, and we're figuring out what we don't know, and boy, all these things could be super scary, or not at all,
or they could,
because we don't know. And and when you take that step back and you're like, that was the entire report, is that there's a new thing we don't know, and how do we not know? And how do we...
And there's always going to be new variants.
And always new variants of every viral disease.
Yes.
And yet at the same time, you're not going to be the schmo who says, oh, I'm over this. I don't want to talk about it. But where do we find another balance in which it's not second by second and overanalyzing and conjecture about what may be and then coverage about what is and then anger about the conjecture? I mean, it's just this cycle that is exhausting. And, you know, we have a new variant. We're preparing for it. It's not in the U.S. now. It will be in the U.S.
Oh, they found their first case in the U.S. finally today.
Okay.
But the thing is it's here. So, Greg, we locked down and we're like, nobody is coming in from Africa. Africa found it. It doesn't mean it originated there.
Seriously.
And by the time we find something new, it's traveled around the world. There's probably not a country in the world, maybe some smaller ones where there's maybe not as much travel going on. It's around the world already.
COVID's proven its chops that it can get around this planet pretty quickly. Boom. I mean, I don't think it's I don't think you're containing this thing in any way. It's just inevitable. But you're even hearing that some of the African nations where they're seeing a spike in this new variant, they've started also at the same time they were seeing a spike, changing to a less expensive way to test that has a higher margin of error. And so now they're asking out loud, is part of that spike because we're using these, I can't remember what the name of them are, but there's a way to test and you can buy a whole lot more of them, but they do have a margin of error that's higher. And so they worry about that. It is hard because you see that they're saying, as Mara, you pointed out, we don't know, we worry, it could be this, it could be that. There's a lot of conjecture. We're not landing on a lot of science or what's right or wrong about it. But then the government, you see, there's the Washington Post broke last night that the Biden administration is thinking about 7-day automatic quarantines for anyone re-entering the country, whether you have the vaccine or not, whether you've tested, with have a test that shows you don't have COVID, they're kind of the one that they're looking at quarantining you for 7 days. It's, you know, that's, they're doing that after you hear about this new variant. And so I think this is where cynicism continues to grow. It's you know, anyway, so
I think
it's a challenge.
Yeah, and I think the frustration is, and obviously it's a new virus. We haven't had it before, so we've never done this before. But I think the frustration was, okay, we're going to lock down the world for 2 weeks and everything's going to be fine. And then it was going to be, it needs to be a little bit longer than that. Let's close the schools. Let's get vaccines. As soon as we get a, you know, 70% of the vaccines will be good, or a certain amount of people. But there's always a new bar. So I think sometimes we can all go through hard things when you know that if you could just do this, we'll be done. Or if you could just do this, we'll be done. And there's always a new do this. And I think that's the frustration.
Yeah, it is frustrating. But I also don't want to leave out that we have this sort of contempt for the institution not knowing what to do. And it's like, why would the institution know what to do? So some of it is personal responsibility, and that it is unknown, and how do we all, you know, stop making the hyperbole? It's just the insistence of wall-to-wall coverage at all levels and responses, I don't think is really healthy to problem solve and to make good government decisions. I think the government is sometimes reacting to the PR, not the science. They're feeling trapped by the public conversation. And I mean, it's exhausting now. It just keeps going.
If it isn't about the government wanting to exert more control, and it's really about trying to protect people, then I think, Mara, your comment about, hey, buyer beware, everybody start taking some personal responsibility. Know that this thing is everywhere and anywhere. If you haven't got it, I am convinced it's only a matter of when. Even if you have the vaccine, I think this thing is going to break through. So I think it's going to happen. And I think we start emphasizing health and wellness. We start emphasizing the things that we can do to make ourselves and our immune system stronger. And let's get away from this idea that we're going to avoid it or never get it. I think this thing's here to stay. I think it's an endemic, not a pandemic. And so I think that government is not going to save everyone from themselves, and we're all just going to have to take the load and the risk, and whatever the reality is, we're going to have to face it and, you know, let it be.
And knowing the reality will be important. I don't want to talk a lot about this, but two courts have now blocked the Biden administration's COVID vaccine mandates. And I think we're in this weird, businesses are trying to prepare for the new year where they know there's vaccine mandates, but they don't know how much work they should put into it because there's holds. And obviously both of these decisions are from appellate courts. And so it's going to go all the way to the Supreme Court, I'm assuming, where they decide if these mandates could happen, which brings us to the next topic I want to talk about. There's an abortion case being heard, and it's been, I think, a long time since we've heard anything on the national level, Mara, about abortion cases. But Mississippi is one of the cases that's now being heard.
Here's what this is interesting for me, and then I'm gonna give a suggestion that's maybe not on court. But why this is interesting is that this case was crafted for the legal challenge. So it is an interesting case study. I mean, it was purposely crafted to challenge specific things in Roe and Casey. And so it talks about viability, but that makes it an interesting test case because of its intent. It's not unintended. Like, I think Texas law has some unintended consequences, is broad purview and pertain to other subject matters. The Mississippi law, the solicitor very conscientiously from the right structured this for a challenge. But, and so, And abortion is interesting because of the equal conviction, the complication, the sensitivity, what's life, it has values in it, it has religion in it, it has precedence in it, it has women's rights in it. But I'm going to go another tact with it. I will just say for those that are not, this is one of the rare cases. You can always live stream the courts. And I'm not suggesting that you lock yourself in your basement and listen to the whole argument, but you'll find access to these arguments online. I know that many of the radio outlets are listening to them. I would just suggest that I feel like if you listen to the Supreme Court on an issue as complex and as volatile as abortion, what it shows you is how America has proper discourse. Because what I love about the Supreme Court is everyone's ready to make the argument. The justices are incredibly bright. No matter how you feel about them, they're incredibly bright. And those who come before you, even if they're not the best of the best, they're the best prepared they will ever be in their lives.
Yeah, they love the law. They understand the law. And however they interpret the law is what their, you know,
belief. And it's a wonderful example of democratic discourse and agreement and disagreement. And when you listen firsthand, so, you know, you get a prescribed point of time, the justices have the upper hand, they can interrupt whenever they want, they can opine whenever they want, but they're so articulate and they're so different. So I would say, regardless of where
will pass bills about abortion, and people are saying, you know, why do you do it? Because you can't change it. But this is why they do it, because they're looking for the case that can go challenge Roe v. Wade and bring it up on a national scale again. That's why they do it.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you, I wasn't planning to mention this, but what you said is so true about the discourse and the deliberation that happens with the Supreme Court. Justice Gorsuch had an evening where he spoke to people on campus at BYU, and I got to attend that a couple years ago. And he showed statistics. He said, I know that America probably thinks that every Republican justice votes conservative, and every justice that's appointed by a Democrat president votes liberal, and that's how we split as a court all the time. He showed very fascinating statistics that shows that it's rarely the case where you see the divide in the court as partisan as we talk about so often. There is a real deliberation, and there is this differences of take of the Constitution and how in its application by the Supreme Court, which I found to be incredibly interesting. It led me to look at our legislative body. I was Speaker at the time, to see how often we were actually landing on common ground versus partisan as respective parties, and it reminded me that we actually do, in good public policy, land on common ground. That said,
just to Greg's point, if you're court watching, to his point, who they see as we'll call them the swing is Kavanaugh and Chief Justice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is Roberts. Who you should be listening to for their course of questioning and for a cue, because those two are considered, depending on what part of the law they want to base their judgment on. So, sorry.
You know, I think it's going to really land. I think the 72 Roe v. Wade, it's the court construed or created or read, and maybe it's there somewhere in the Constitution, this constitutional protection of privacy. And it's been argued by originalists that protection of privacy is not found inside our Constitution, and it's outside of the purview of a Supreme Court and making decisions that are constitutional or not. I do think that is an area that's going to be really stared at and scrutinized, because the other argument is this federalism, where states have the right, if it's not defined in our U.S. Constitution, they have the right to create the processes, and the electorate and the people that live in New York, the state of New York, and the people that live in Mississippi, or the people that live in Montana, Utah, their respective legislative bodies may come up with different processes on how to protect women, protect people, protect the unborn, whatever it may be. They have it within their purview to make those decisions. So is there an overriding constitutional protection that would interrupt federalism? I used to think federalism was the federal government, but federalism is states' rights. Is this a states' rights issue, or are there defined constitutional issues there worth defending? So that's what I think it'll be about, and it'll be interesting to see how they deliberate.
Greg and I have committed to making our sessions shorter, so I'm going to resist.
Yeah, you were 2 minutes, 20 seconds on the last one. Then you interrupted me on my 1 minute into mine.
So I'm timing it
because I knew you'd do this to me. You tell me that I talk long, and I'm timing.
Okay.
So you know.
He is keeping track. Well, I want to talk about another issue that I feel like it kind of went away for a little while. If there was anything good that came from the pandemic, when our kids were at home, as I guess we didn't have to worry about school shootings, but it's happened yet again. And today, a 15-year-old was charged with murder, terrorism, and other crimes for shooting that killed 4 fellow students and then injured others at the Michigan High School. And I think it was kind of a relief that it was quiet for a while, but it's back. And every time a school shooting or a workplace shooting happens, Mara, we get back to the discussion of gun rights and, like, how do these kids get the guns? And there's always all these questions, but really, and the fight starts online and everybody's like, well, this kid shouldn't have had a gun, or how'd they get the gun? I don't know that we know if it was his parents at this point or if they had it legally. There's so many questions. Is there ever a way that we're going to be able to solve this, or is this just how the world works?
So sadly, this is not the only mass gun incident this week. There have been at least four. What we're mapping to is some arbitrary in which a mass shooting is five or more dead. And the fact that we have that standard now for coverage is incredible. I would just say, I'll keep mine short, but without exception, gun violence, mass gun violence, the killing of Americans' children, the one common denominator is not age or race or gender or mental health status. The common denominator is guns. And until we accept that the common denominator is guns and we stop deifying a piece of merchandise and we stop attributing these values to weaponry and merchandise, and we don't change our relationship to weapons, the common denominator of American gun violence is guns.
My cynicism about what my friend Mara just said is that if you look at the homicide rate in Chicago every night, the number of people being killed is just it's a war zone. You have inner cities and you have areas where it is not front page news. It is not something we talk about. It makes for great clickbait, and not to demean that schools and school violence isn't atrocious, because it is, but it is constantly used in this argument about the Second Amendment and about people's right to bear arms. Whereas some of the places in our country that have the strictest laws, you see some of the worst violence and worst crime and homicide rates, and we don't talk about it. And I just find it to be selective logic. The bottom line is this: if there is a person that commits a crime and they happen to be left of center in their social media posts, in their whatever it is they advocate, if a conservative were to point to the person's left-leaning philosophies and try to draw a line from it to the crime they committed, immediately the media and everyone else says, how disgusting that you would politicize this issue. But it is 100% the case that if there is a school shooting, or if there is something that the left actually wants to politicize, it is never unseemly. It is never untoward to find a political consequence to an act of a crime or something else. And so, again, it's not a two-way street. We're not applying this logic fairly, where if we see something happen and we want to understand the person who did it, we look at their politics and say, well, that must have informed that crime they committed. We don't look at all crimes that way. We only do that if it's a conservative issue that you want to attack, and it's a moderate, or not you, Mara, you're perfectly reasonable on this, but everybody else other than you, they do that. I just get fatigued over this selective outrage, selective logic.
Just while you were talking, I Googled, just so if we want to know, Chicago this year, 731 murders, on pace to surpass the record high. Philadelphia, 500. Baltimore, 300. Washington, D.C., 204, which is the most since 2003. So there's a lot happening everywhere, and there's always the talk about mental health and everything else that goes along with it. I don't know if you guys saw that video, but there were some kids inside of a classroom yesterday. Did you see it? Where they were all kind of like waiting, and someone on the other end was saying, like pretending to be like a sheriff's deputy. They were like, is it a sheriff's deputy? Is it not? It was actually the kid, the gunman, they believe. And the only reason why at some point they ran out the window on the other side of the classroom to escape is he's like, bro. And they're like, okay, well, no sheriff's officer, you know, is going to say bro to us. And then I'm thinking, what the heck is going through this kid's mind? Because he's not just coming in upset, angry, and like shooting and killing anyone in his path. He's like lying and conniving to get inside of rooms. And I'm like, wow, there are a lot of layers of scary here.
The common denominator is access to guns.
No,
it's the common denominator for gun violence is access.
My
to
assumption
guns.
Is that it's probably
there are over 300. We've said this before. There are over 300 million guns in the United States of America. You can draw up any law you want. You can have every presidential ceremony signing you want in any lawn in the White House. Those guns will still be here tomorrow. They are not going to go away.
Right.
This isn't Australia. Australia is the size of California.
You can dog whistle all you want.
I'm not dog whistling.
But the
I'm
common
telling you,
denominator for gun violence
to what
is
end,
access
Mara?
To guns.
To what end? Do you want to get rid
Do
of access to guns?
Do you disagree with that?
I'm saying,
Do
well,
you
the
disagree
sun rises
with the
in
common
the east.
Denominator of gun
well,
violence.
Yeah, you know
is
what?
Access
if someone,
guns.
If someone,
so should
if there's
we
a knife,
start a constructive conversation about access to guns?
Again, that's Well, you just said that's a dog whistle. I'm saying the access to guns for criminals and criminally minded are not going away.
But isn't there's that no the problem law that's going to get rid solve? Of it. Should we noodle on it? Or should we just go wave our flags again?
Well, I'll tell you this. You don't have DAs that won't prosecute violent crimes. You don't have the lawlessness you have. Because if you think
the homicide rate is bad, I'm interested in changing it.
Watch your eyes pop out of your head when you see the violent crime rate that the FBI statistics reported this year that are over 100% higher in some of these major metropolitan areas. That, again, isn't about guns and in and of itself about guns. It's about crime, about what's being charged, felonies that are being broken down to misdemeanors. There's lawlessness going on. Flash mobs used to be this thing where people got together and danced on social media like you play. Flash mobs now are just smashing the windows of Nordstrom's and all these places and stealing because
Craig,
guess
this,
what?
This tactic
shoplifting
of yours to
isn't
say,
a crime
let's
anymore.
Talk about international
so now
terrorism.
We see this.
The
I mean,
tactic of changing the issue
I'm
is
not
helpful.
Mara, I'm saying that you're trying to be so selective and you so myopic about the guns when violent crimes on the whole are going up, and it's not because of the guns. It's because of the lawlessness and the refusal to charge violent crimes as violent crimes.
So you don't think legislatures should be addressing it in the specific? You like overarching laws that take in huge amounts expanses of big government.
Anybody who's purchased a gun will know that you're not sitting in, it is a highly scrutinized process to purchase a gun in America.
It's state by state, Greg.
Highly, highly.
You can't say that. There are a million systems to purchase a gun.
So you're saying that there's some less.
There is no national standard to purchase a gun.
The database is a national database.
Not everyone requires the registration. You can say that about the great state of Utah.
Anybody go.
Greg, there's no standardized model.
Conservative Utah, go buy a gun and see the kind of scrutiny.
I hadn't read yet about the dad. So the dad, you said, bought the gun 4 days ago. I'm assuming he went through the legal process
of
doing
it. Yeah, it's a traditional 9mm. I think they were trying to unpack how he got it. But I don't think this was a bad guy doing a bad thing.
So how do we change it? Because it seems like a lot of times when we come to the common ground is that we can look and make sure that people go through the proper, you know, hoops that they jump through to get the guns. How do we change that if the parents or the adults are going through the proper channels, they're buying a gun they can legally have, and then their kid has it? Do
My
we charge the parents for not locking it up?
It's a lot about treating it as a consumer object and not this aggrandized sense of who America is. So if we could just regulate guns, not restrict them, not eliminate them, this is not,
if
don't
consumer
go into.
Consumer goods are not constitutionally protected. Your
but
right to bear arms
the
is.
The Second Amendment isn't interpreted that way until the 70s and 80s, and once again in the 90s was the first time that the Second Amendment had ever been afforded to an individual. It's not across the board, Greg. It's not, you act like our hands are tied
America
about the weaponry.
America has historically had, people have had guns in their homes.
Yeah, and I'm
not
arguing that. I'm not arguing
that
we should get rid of guns. You ask for what it is, and we should standardize the treatment of guns at the level we need to, because right now it's not standardized. No one said take your guns away. There's nothing dramatic here. There's nothing that's going to hurt hunters, but you have to get off of your hallowed ground that doesn't exist around the Second Amendment.
It's already a highly scrutinized exercise to get a gun.
It is not.
It's banned in some areas. You can't get guns in some areas.
Apparently some 50
or 15-year-olds and everywhere else
figured out in Michigan how to get around this highly
restricted
system.
My point, Mara, is you can keep trying to make laws that you think will stop that from happening. Those guns aren't going away.
I don't think I'm trying to make a law. If you will listen to me, it's about the point of view that has decided to treat guns as some act of freedom instead of just a commodity that it is.
No, it's, the sovereignty, unlike kings and dictators, the sovereignty in America are the people. And
yes,
your right to bear arms is not a sporting right. It's not a right to hunt. It's how you protect yourself.
That's defined as militia. There's so much in the Constitution beyond
and
you
this has
and
been
your
a country that has
guns.
Had guns. This is why Japan said they're
not
going
to
invade California. There's more guns
more
than blades of grass. I am. Okay. I'm just saying that you don't,
right.
There's, I don't know
this
how you think you're going to restrict guns.
I always
guns.
Wonder if we can mend the relationship between
well,
there's,
we're I don't,
I've
I don't
known she's
so.
Crazy on this issue for
okay.
ever.
Here's something that you might be able to agree
and she
on.
She would say
I
the same
know.
About me, so that's fine.
You're a lobbyist for police now. You're married to a police officer, a chief, a one-time chief. We have a new chief in Provo. I don't personally know a lot about him. He was over the UTA police for a while, also at Salt Lake City. Greg, are we approving of the new police chief in Provo, or is the jury still out?
No, actually, it's a...
Tell us his name. It's just
Fred Ross.
Fred Ross.
Fred Ross. I applaud Provo for making the decision. It hit the news. He was very tight-lipped about it, but... look, Fred lived in Draper. We were neighbors. He's always been a strong community, not activist, but just Draper Days. It's our annual, you know,
fair. He puts on a good carnival.
He works. He volunteers. He's riding the golf cart around at the Draper Days parade, at the Draper Days festival, helping people all day. And he has a job. He had a tough job in Salt Lake City, right down at Rio Grande. When I was speaker, because we knew each other, he asked me to come down there to Ground Zero, where there's some real human carnage going on.
So he's
sadly
the one who talked you into them.
He did. And so then he, from Salt Lake City, he then moved on to UTA, and now he's going to be the chief of police in Provo. He is a true public servant. I've watched him. He humanized people that were experiencing homelessness. He found ways to help them get, if they need to get to get a birth certificate, get to the Department of Health so they could do that. If they need to get a job, he tried to find ways for transportation. He's just a good, good man. He has always been committed to his community where he lives, where he works. And I'm just very happy to see him in a tough, tough job in a time where, sadly, in America, law enforcement's oftentimes painted as the bad guys. There's no version of Fred Ross you can paint as a bad guy. He's the
best.
Okay,
well, let's ask Mara about that. Do you know a different version, or do you align with how?
So Greg, well, so are you, well
do you
done.
Align with Greg Hughes? Just say
well
yes or
done,
no. It's a
Mayor
yes or no.
Cafusi, I think we should expect big things of Fred Ross. He is a leader we should all start pointing to. We should give him as many platforms as we can. If you have a big idea about community policing and anything beyond that, give those ideas to Chief Ross. He is such a good public servant. He's doing it for the right reasons. He has an endless amount of energy and imagination. He's not afraid to be right. He's not afraid to be wrong. He respects the people he works with, but he holds people to a higher standard, which we're often missing. So I think that I wish he were closer to Salt Lake is what I think. I wish he were the Salt Lake City Police Chief, but good luck to Provo. And I think Fred Ross is someone we should all be paying attention to. If you didn't see it, Channel 2 did a story about it last night, but look to Fred for being inventive and innovative in law enforcement.
So yes, you agree with me.
I think Mayor Cafusi made a great choice.
So you wholly agree with Greg Hughes.
That's what I
took from that answer. Thank you so much, Mara.
Not
that's
today.
Beautiful.
Other times, not today. I'm not feeling it today.
I know we are short on time right now, but I do want to mention that Friday, when we're not going to be hanging out together, we'll all be watching our TVs and clinging to Twitter to see if we have a partial government shutdown or not. Real quickly, thumbs up or thumbs down? Are we going to solve this problem, Mara, before Friday?
I think we inevitably have to, but why do they have, in the middle of a pandemic, seriously, can't you just not make trouble? So we'll have to sort it out eventually, but both sides are childish and petulant, and they'll make us suffer in
I know.
Between.
Happy yeah. holidays, well, everyone.
It's a debt ceiling. We keep crashing through it, but, you know, going further and further in debt. And I'm telling you, the inflation monster is really impacting us. We're seeing groceries, we're seeing the cost of everything going up, and unlike some people who think that that's temporary or that's good, it's not. And it does help harm struggling families in yeah. terms of their groceries and everything else.
We keep kicking the can as the problem, and it's not even just a pandemic problem or this no. problem or this president problem. It just keeps happening. So I hope Congress pulls it together and figures it out. I do want to let you know, too, if you are listening to this podcast before Monday, December 6th, I have a story that will be airing about a doctor here in Utah who unfortunately took his life during the pandemic. It's a very complicated case, but there's some hope that comes out of this, and I hope you'll listen because I think there's a lot of our caregivers who are not being cared for right now, and there's a bill coming in the legislature that I hope will maybe save some of our doctors' lives, our caregivers' lives, because they need our care. And that is coming up on Monday night, so we can talk about that next week. But tune in 10 o'clock then, and otherwise, we will be back next Friday. Thanks so much for coming in and playing nice some of the time and fighting a little bit, right?
I have no dog whistle. I just want that known right now. I have dogs, but I have no whistle for any of those dogs.
We wouldn't know because you can't hear it unless
you
know.
Ooh. Yeah, I know. That's just your spin, dog whistles.